This is a recording of The Monkey Who Wouldn't Kill by Henry Drummond. This recording is provided by the Christian Classics Ethereal Library and read by Rene Lacroix of Woodstock, Ontario, Canada. For more information or to volunteer, please visit us at ccel.org. The Monkey Who Wouldn't Kill. About this book, by Kathleen O'Bannon, CCEL staff. Along with a passion for evangelism, Drummond also had a passion for the natural sciences. As a missionary, not only did he preach to the peoples of Central Africa, but he also studied and observed the African wildlife. Drummond's travels inspire this delightful children's book in which a mischievous monkey wreaks havoc upon all who try to catch him. Introduction by Ishbel Aberdeen and Marjorie A.H. Gordon, editors of Wee Willie Winkie. A few years ago, the readers of Wee Willie Winkie detected a new vein running through the editorial notes and announcements which preface the monthly collection of juvenile literary efforts which make up their little magazine. There was an originality and a humor which they had not noticed before, and competitions were suggested to them of a type for a repetition of which they clamored. And then presently a new serial story began, and the hairbreadth escapes of that immortal monkey which it recorded were breathlessly followed by Wee Willie Winkie's army of bairns all over the world, and, when it was concluded, so numerous were the entreaties for a sequel that compulsion had to be resorted to in order to secure the revelation of the later life of the hero under a new name. And now at last the editors who were responsible for the periodical referred to have to make a confession. Once upon a time they both, mother and daughter, forsook their office and went away to Canada for several months in 1891, and during that time their joint editorial chair was occupied by no other than Professor Henry Drummond. And now our readers will understand to whom they are indebted for the quaint sayings and funny stories and competitions betokening someone who understood boys and girls too. And they will be grateful to a certain contributor who failed to send his copy in time for the monthly issue on one occasion and so forced the then editor to sit down and write something. It was the first time he had ever tried to write fiction. And as the story grew under his pen, he began to realize the joy of creation. And so it was that in spite of his playful deprecation of such nonsense being printed, the adventures of the monkey that would not kill came to be told. And we know that we can do our old friends and readers no greater kindness than to dedicate these chronicles to them in permanent form, in memory of one to whom Wee Willie and his bairns were ever a subject of affectionate interest. Chapter 1. There is no such thing as an immortal monkey, but this monkey was as near it as possible. Talk of a cat's 9 lives. This monkey had 90. A monkey's business in the world is usually to make everybody merry. But the special mission of this one, I fear, was to make everybody as angry as ever they could be. In wrath-producing power, in fact, this monkey positively shone. How many escapes the monkey had before the runaway slave presented it to the missionary, from whom I first heard of it, no one knows. It certainly had not much hair on when it arrived, and there was an ominous scar on its head, and its ears were not wholly symmetrical. But the children were vastly delighted with it, and after much kind treatment the creature was restored to rude health, and, I must confess, to quite two rude spirits. The children wanted him baptized by the time-honored title of Jekyll, but by a series of exploits in which the monkey distinguished himself at the expense of every member of the household in turn, it became evident that only one name would fit a quadruped of his peculiar disposition, and that was Tricky. Tricky, therefore, he was called, and as Tricky he lived and did not die. There was no peace in the home after Tricky came. He ate everything, upset everything, broke everything, stole everything, did everything that the average monkey ought not to do. If they shut him up in a room, Tricky got out by the chimney. If they put him out of the room, Tricky came in by the chimney. What could you do with such a creature? He could not be kept in, and he could not be kept out. So a court-martial was held, and Tricky was sentenced to be given away. But by this time the whole place knew Tricky, and no one would have him. Such an unusual refusal of a present was never known before. Even the runaway slave smiled sweetly when his old friend was offered to him, and protested that, to his deep regret, he was unable to buy nuts enough to keep him. The idea of wandering Tricky in the woods, of course, occurred to the genius of the village, and a detachment of boys set off one Saturday to carry it into effect. But you might as well have tried to wander a carrier pigeon. Like Mary's little lamb, everywhere these boys went, that monkey went. When they ran, it ran. When they doubled back, it doubled back. And when they got home, dead tired, it was only to find Tricky laughing at them from the church roof. That night the worst happened. When the people assembled for the weekly meeting, there was not found in that church one whole hymn book. Someone, apparently, had been pelting the pulpit with them. The cushions were torn, the blinds were a wreck, two stops in the harmonium were pulled out bodily. After the service, the missionary was solemnly waited on by a deputation. They were closeted for an hour and a half, but no one, except themselves, ever knew what was said or done. The only circumstances that one could in any way connect with this mysterious consul was that about midnight a small boat was seen stealthily putting out to sea. It contained two figures. One, who rowed, was the senior elder. The other, who sat in the stern, looked like a very small boy. Chapter 2. The day was not yet broken when the watch of the ship Vulcan, lying becalmed off the coast, was roused by a peculiar noise aft. Going to the spot, he was surprised to find a much bedraggled monkey rubbing itself on a pile of sailcloth. The creature had evidently swum or drifted a long distance, and was now endeavoring to restore circulation. Jerry, being a humane man, got it some biscuit and a saucer of grog and waited developments. These were not slow to show themselves. Within 24 hours, the commander of the ship Vulcan, 740 tons register, was a monkey named Tricky. Time would fail me to tell of the life that monkey led them all on board the Vulcan. After the first week, only two things lay between him and death at any moment. One was his inventiveness. Tricky's wickedness was nothing if not original. Every day he was at some new villainy, and anything new on board ship is sacred. There is no Punch published on board ship, but Tricky was all the comic papers rolled into one. But that was not the main reason. There's a good deal of quiet quarreling on board ship. The mate spared Tricky because he thought he would some day give the captain a turn. The captain let him live, hoping he would do something dreadful to the mate. Everybody waited to see Tricky do something to somebody else. So he rose to the highest rank in the merchant marine and was respected almost to idolatry by all on board the Vulcan. One day Tricky was hanged, formally, deliberately, and judicially hanged. What had he done? He had killed the ship cat. It was a deliberate murder, with no extenuating circumstances, and a rope, with a noose, was swung over the yardarm, and Tricky run up in the presence of all the crew. This happened about 8 bells, and at dusk Tricky was still hanging there, very quiet and motionless. Next morning Tricky was still there. As live as you are, Tricky was not hanged. He was only hanging, and as everybody knows, monkeys rather like hanging. In fact, though Tricky was still up there, he had got his hands well round the rope, and was, on the whole, fairly at home. The rope round a neck like Tricky's was a mere boa. The executioners were rather ashamed of themselves when they saw how matters stood, but instead of softening them, this dangling mockery of a dead monkey still further roused their wrath, and the boatswain was told off to end the drama by tossing Turkey into the sea. The boatswain was up on the shrouds in a moment, and loosening the rope with one hand, and catching the monkey by the tail with the other, he swung poor Turkey a good yard over the ship's side into the Atlantic. When the boatswain descended upon the deck, he was greeted with a sudden deluge of rain. It was only Turkey shaking the salt water off. The monkey had climbed up the stern rope and reached the deck before him. What would have happened next is hard to predict, but at this point the captain, attracted by the scream of laughter which greeted the drenching of the boatswain, came up and was told the sequel to the hanging. Now the captain was a blunt, good-natured man, and he avowed that neither man nor monkey who had ever been hanged on board his ship should ever be put to death again. This was the law on shore, he said, and he would see fair play. So Turkey received another lease of life, and thus the ship Vulcan was kept in hot water for 2 months more. About the end of that period there came a crisis. The ship was nearing port, and a heavy cleaning was in progress. Among other things, the ship's boats had to be painted. In an evil hour, one of the men went below to dinner and left his paint pot standing on the deck. If Turkey had lost the chance, he would not have been a monkey at all. Needless to say, he rose to the occasion. That his supreme hour was come was quite evident from the way he set to work at once. He began with the parrot, which he painted vermilion. Then he passed the brush gaily along the newly varnished woodwork, daubed the masts and shrouds all over, obliterated the name of the lifebuoys, and wound up a somewhat successful performance by emptying the pot over the captain's best coat, which was laid in the sun to get creases out. I draw a veil over what happened on the Vulcan during the next quarter of an hour. There was never such a muster of the crew since they left port. Everybody seemed to have business on deck. When the captain came up, you could have heard a pin drop. I shall not repeat his language, nor try to compare with anything earthly the voice with which he ordered every man below. All I will record is, and it is to his everlasting honor, that in that awful hour the captain was true to his vow. "Do you see land?" he roared to the steersman.
Aye, sir," said the man. "Land on the larboard bow."
Then, said the captain, "put her head to it." That night, late, the ship stood close in to a small island on the north coast of Scotland, and a boat was solemnly sent ashore, and after that Turkey was no more seen by any of the crew of the Vulcan. End of chapter 2.